And thank you, everybody that's read, and a welcome to those people that have joined us since we first started, and a particular welcome to any newcomers or visitors to our meeting this evening, and we hope you hear something that will encourage you to keep coming back. So it apparently falls to me to introduce our speaker this evening. This is a lady that I've actually met once or twice across the pond. An idea that she shared for us before, but she has a great story, and I'm going to just, without further ado, Jody, would you please share with us?
Thank you, Steve. Hi, this is, I'm an addict, and my name is Jody.
Hi, Jody.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Jay, for asking me to speak. And I did speak, but I didn't speak on BlueJean. I spoke on another platform. And I was thank you guys for having some patience with me today, because it took me several. I don't know what I had to do. I had to, you know, uninstall and reinstall BlueJean to get this to work today. So, but I'm glad that it all worked out. I guess I'll start, you know, that I was born. Contrary to the things you might have heard, I was not hatched. I was actually born. And I was born to fairly young people. They were married. They were 18 and 19, and very excited to have me. They were both already using quite a bit of drugs at that time, both of them. It was the 60s, and, you know, the people used quite a bit. My childhood ended up being quite difficult, as many people's did. Growing up with parents that used, I used along with them. I also grew up in New Orleans, and in New Orleans, a lot of using is still very accepted. I know we don't talk about specific drugs, but still in New Orleans, a child in a restaurant can order, you know, a drink. You know, I was in New Orleans about 3 years ago, and I was pointing that out to some of my friends, and I asked the waiter, and I was, over there's a table with, you know, some people and a child that looks about eight, and would you serve that child liquor if they asked for it? And the waiter said, well, of course I would. She's there with her parents. If she ordered liquor, I would serve it to her. And that's the way it was. And that's the way it is, I suppose. So as far as that particular one, and there are some other ones that, legal or not legal, were very easy to get. When I was using, actually, it was very easy to get legal drugs as well. Prescribed drugs is what I meant by that. So anyway, I don't remember a time that I didn't use. I don't believe that my parents stopped using drugs while conception and pregnancy or anything. And then there are a lot of practices that would have kept me high, you know. Anyway, I started to request medications and stuff. I ended up in the foster care system for stupid reasons, but even though my parents ended up both dealing drugs, my mother and my parents got separated and then later divorced. The judge was very unhappy with my parents, the way my parents chose, who my parents chose to date. When they actually went to get a divorce, they each had a girlfriend, and the judge was very unhappy with my father because he was dating a minor, and he was very unhappy with my mother because she was dating a woman. So neither one of them could have custody of me, and that's why I went into foster care. Anyway, years later, any kind of abuse, you know, physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, and neglect. I got all of those things. So lucky was I. And I had one main coping skill with all of that, and that would be that I would use to oblivion. I was certain that I was bad. I was certain that I was incomplete. And I could not always hide myself well enough. So I would use as much as I could. I tried to stay out of trouble. I was always fearful that if I got into trouble, if I made waves, then whoever was around me, whoever was caring for me, would get rid of me. I was pretty sure that I was easily disposable. So so that's where I was. And I did try to the best of my ability to be a good person. But addiction had me doing all the things that I did not want to do, going places I did not want to go, with people I did not want to be with. So I believe that I was fortunate. I was able to go to college, even though I didn't end up using that as my career, but I was in college and I was getting educated, and I think partly because of the way I look, I was overlooked, and I've never been arrested. So I'm white, and I always looked very young. Well, yes. And then for that matter, when I was 19, I came to a point where I didn't know what to do. I would try to quit using whatever. And the only way I could manage to quit using was to substitute one for another, one addiction for another. And even as a using addict, with very little knowledge of anything about addiction, I knew that that was not good. So I had been reaching out to religion. And I had been trying to reach out to the religion of my father's family. And I think maybe because I had had the most exposure to that. So that particular religion had these retreats for college age people. And I think I had been twice before. And when I was at the retreats, I actually felt some relief at the retreats. Strangely enough, they were called awakenings. And there were these people there. They shine. I wanted what they had. It didn't seem possible to have what they had, but I really wanted to go. There was one coming up, but I was in a situation where I had already sold pretty much everything. I was still working, but I was just barely maintaining. And so I actually went to the church and asked them to pay for me to go. And I even got a ride with someone. Well, I had sold my car too, so I got a ride with someone. And so I got as high loaded, used as much as I could, and went to this event. And I was fine on the fr that night, which would be Friday night. Saturday was another story. As you can imagine, if you didn't bring anything to continue your addiction, you would go through withdrawals, and I was. So, the way this retreat worked was they had a like a mandatory lights out period or something in the cabin, and there was no way. And they were shared cabins. I don't know how many people were in a room, but I knew that I couldn't stay there. And I was wandering around the campgrounds. And at this point, I'm in this, I don't know what, religious retreat in Alexandria, Louisiana, wandering around in the dark. And I noticed that there is one, in fact, one light on, and it's in the kitchen of the facility. So I went there. And when I opened the door, the people that I wanted to have what they had, they were in the room. And they said, come in, we've been waiting for you. And they were having a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. They had a basic text, and they took turns reading out of the basic text to start the meeting. And they shared, and I don't know what anybody said exactly, but I knew that I belonged, and I understood what they were speaking about, and I could tell that they understood what I was feeling, and they said that I didn't ever have to use again. And mind you, I had tried to quit on my own, and I couldn't. And I had tried, substituting one for another and finding myself back in the same predicament. So I listened, and I cried, and I listened. And when the retreat was over, I didn't know what I was going to do. And they offered that I go back with them. So there were, I'm going to say there were seven people in the meeting besides myself, and five of them lived in Shreveport. So I went with them to Shreveport, and they basically took turns with me. And I. Just they had me going to like a meeting. Like there were lunch meetings and there were night meetings, and I was just being shuttled around from meeting to meeting, and it was amazing actually. There were lots of people that weren't using. I had never even imagined that that was a possibility. I had heard that there were people that didn't drink alcohol before, but I didn't actually believe it. I thought that it was, I don't know, a lie or that they were using something else. I didn't think that that was true. But these people I did believe. And they seemed so honest and so caring. So that day that I went into the meeting, I have never used again since then. People now use a term like white key tag something. One, I don't know. Or they used to say white chip wonder, something like that. But I actually did never get one of those. They didn't have that where I got clean. Where I got clean, they took a dime and had it taped down to a piece of paper that had the hotline number on it because a phone call was a dime. And you could use that dime in a payphone to call the hotline. So, anyway, I stayed clean. I started taking care of myself, and part of taking care of myself is I have problems with mental health, so I had to address those things. Actually, when I got clean, I had a few other physical problems too. I had torn cartilage in my knee. It looked like a clipper injury, whatever that is, a clip, some kind of sports injury. I got it. I had been a dance major and I had got it dancing, but so I had to take care of myself physically. I was told to get a sponsor, so I did, and I had to call my sponsor every day, and I did. My first sponsor was quite interesting. And she is actually still clean. When I got clean in Shreveport, I ended up, by their recommendation, actually, going back down to New Orleans, which is where most of my family lives, or lived at that time, anyway. And so that I would have support. There were quite a few meetings in New Orleans at that time, NA meetings. And there was an NA clubhouse. And there were five women with 5 years clean. That was like a miracle. 5 years. It's just hard to imagine that somebody could not use for 5 years. So one of these women was my sponsor. And I would listen to what she had to say. She would tell me to call her every day, and I would call her every day. But back then we didn't have cell phones, of course. So most of the time I would just call and leave a message on a cell phone. On an answering machine, I'm sorry, leaving a message on an answering machine. It was that way for getting rides as well. So I would call these people and leave a message, and I ended up living in a halfway house for some time, and we had a shared phone. So often I couldn't get phone calls back. So I could make phone calls, but it was really hard to get a phone call back. I would just have to keep trying. So, but I did what I was told, which I did like 90 and 90, which 90 meetings in 90 days. Called my sponsor every day. I worked the steps with my sponsor. And I did service. I did a lot of service. I did whatever I was told. I got a home group. And well, you know, one of the things they were going to let me do was and they said they didn't want me to do that anymore. So, and for a long time, everybody joked that when I made coffee, the spoons melted. I want you to know that at my home group now, I can make coffee, and people don't talk about melting spoons, although some people do say it's a little strong. I don't get any complaints, and people thank me for making the coffee. So there is improvement, and that's always a good thing. So I got clean. I got a job, and I was working. I was working as a bicycle courier in New Orleans. It was a pretty good job. So that was good. I made friends. I went to conventions. I liked going to conventions. We would go, different people, you know, groups of people would go. I went to a convention in Texas. It was called the Lone Star Convention. I went to a convention in Louisiana. I went to one in Mississippi, and then I went to one in Tennessee. One in Tennessee was called Volunteer Regional. Anyway, most of those places there would be people from Florida in the convention. And in at the end of the convention, or well, not at the end, but Saturday night speakers at the conventions, they would do like clean time countdowns, and they would do a thing that showed where everybody was, where you were from, and whenever they would get to Florida, the people from Florida would scream, "Get clean and move to Florida." And so anyway, it was pretty fun. I made friends with some of the Floridians. I had a thing where I went into anaphylactic shock at one of the conventions, and one of the people from Florida was a nurse, and he saw me going into anaphylactic shock and took care of me. And he and his wife had invited me. I had said something about wanting to move to Florida, and they said, you know, if you move here, you know, you can come stay on our couch and all of this stuff. So, I had gotten laid off from my job. At one point, I got laid off from my job as a courier, and then I got another job, and then I got laid off from that job. And all this time, I was doing service work. I was on the H&I committee. I was on like every subcommittee for the World Convention that was going to be in New Orleans that year. I was, you know, I would just do everything. And it was so much fun. And then I went to the Florida Regional Convention. It was in Fort Lauderdale. And it was amazing. When I got there, there were these two people that were calling my name from across the way, and my friends were like, "Who are these people?" And I didn't know them, you know, and they were like, "No, you have to know them because they know your name." And I had been to Florida spring break, and I had no memory of it at all. But while I was there, I had called the NA hotline, and these people had come and got me and taken me to a meeting, and I had no memory of it at all. But they remembered me, and knew my name, and so that was miraculous. And that had happened like maybe 3 weeks before I got clean, but I mean, I still don't have any memory of it. The only like little piece of evidence that I had was I had handwritten the Serenity Prayer on a napkin and kept it. And I didn't know what it was from, but I kept it. I knew that it was important. So I had that. So one of those people, it was a couple, a man and a woman, and they had come to pick me up together. But the woman is still clean. Amazing. It's amazing, really. And she still lives on the east coast of Florida. It's just, there's so many miracles in this program. There really are. So, I ended up moving to Florida. I stayed in Florida a bit for the summer, and then I went back to New Orleans for the World Convention, and then I moved to Florida for good. And I've lived here ever since. So it's been a while. And since I've been here, which yeah, I got clean August, not August, April 19th, 1986. 86. And I moved here in August of the next year, so of 87. Since I've been here, I have gone to college. When I was in Louisiana and I was in college, I was studying dance because I liked dance and theater. I liked theater too. But after 3 years in college there, I did realize that dance majors really have just a few options. They could be professional dancers, and I did not want to be a professional dancer. Or they could open a dance studio. I did not want to open a dance studio. Or maybe they were there to get married, and I wasn't really there to get married either. So I went back after I had gotten clean and went back to my childhood dreams, which was I wanted to build bridges. I had grown up in New Orleans where water was such an amazing factor. And I remember when they were building the interstates around Houston and how complicated and amazing that was. So I had stopped doing those kinds of thing. I had been warned against it by guidance counselors. My guidance counselors told me that, math is my worst subject, and so I should avoid all careers with math. And they were partly true that math is my worst subject. And I will tell you this, that it turns out it's okay. Not every engineer needs to have a 4.0. And it's okay for it not to be your best subject. It's okay to have to try really, really hard at something. I did graduate, and I became a civil engineer. And it was really amazing. And I got better at math. I think the first math that I took in college was Calc 1, and my average was a 69.7 or something, which rounded up to whatever grade I needed to pass. Like I needed a 70 to pass, and 69.7 was just close enough for me to pass. The next course I made a B in, and then I made A's after that. I actually started to catch on to the math, so that math still is not like, I don't live, breathe everything math. I never did. But it started to be where I could understand. It started to be where I wasn't at the bottom of the class, where I could do my homework easily. And I don't know. I think it's important because for me anyway, I didn't want to be, you know, just anything. That was something that was really important to me, to be the civil engineer. And it seemed like it was like people had been expecting me to not do it, like saying, if you can't be the best in the world, then you shouldn't even try. But that's not real. You know, just like our program teaches us, it's about progress. It's about progress, not perfection. It's okay for me not to be the best. It's okay for me to be just my best. So those were all really important lessons for me to learn. And I guess I learned them. So that's good. I fell in love and I got married. Well, right now I've been married 24 years. I have two children, a boy and a girl. My son is in college and my son is 22. My daughter is 14. I homeschooled both my children, which means, you know, I teach them at home instead of sending them to school. And I, oh, I know. So after I had my son, at some point, I kind of fell away from the fellowship for a bit. It was gradual. I had a sponsor kind of move away or something and got another sponsor, and then it didn't really work out. And so I didn't really have a sponsor. And I was okay with that because I still had a home group and I had friends in the fellowship and I talked to my friend and my support and everything would be fine. But it wasn't really the same. All of that was true. And then I kind of wasn't going to as many meetings as much, and I'm not sure what happened to my home group, but then I didn't have a home group. And it got to the point where I was just going to one meeting, and I was not going quite every week, maybe every other. I think sometimes once a month, and then every other again, so very seldom. And I was in the back of the room and nobody spoke to me and I spoke to nobody. I did still have some friends in the fellowship, but I didn't talk to them so much. And I started to feel like I did before. I'm not sure where it went exactly. I know, you know, I lost the sponsor first and then the meetings, and somewhere along the way, I kind of didn't pray as much. And then maybe I wasn't grateful. I'm not exactly sure, but, you know, all of those things that I worked so hard for, all of those things that were so important to me, kind of just started to slip away. Well, I got to the point where I felt lonely most of the time, even though I was married and I had a child, and I started to feel like I didn't belong anywhere and that I was just different from everyone else. And I started to feel sorry for myself a lot of the time. And so one day, I calls one of my friends in the rooms still and asked him how he was doing and such, and then he asked me how I was doing, and I told him. And he just said, "Well, you know exactly what you need to do." And I was puzzled by that. I didn't know what to do. But he said, "All you need to do is go to meetings and get a sponsor and work the steps." Was just that simple. It was just that simple. I started to go to meetings. I got a sponsor. And then I got another sponsor. I started working the steps. I started to feel like me again. I started to feel whole. I started to have faith. I started to feel happy. I didn't say, but I also started to do service when I started going to the meetings. I don't know, for me, somehow, if I'm going to meetings, I'm going to do service. That's it. I have a home group, I'm going to do service there and whatever else. So, I feel like that was kind of my relapse. I didn't get to the point where I used, but that's where I was going. And somehow I was just blessed that when he asked me who I was, I actually told him. When he reminded me, I actually listened. I think about how many times somebody says, "How are you?" And I go, "Well, I'm fine." Especially during that period, and I wouldn't be fine. But that was my answer. So, one of the things when I got back in is that I don't necessarily do that anymore. Even if I'm at the grocery store and they say, "How are you today?" If I'm not having a good day, I do not say that I'm fine. I say, "Today's troubling," or "This today is a challenge," or I just say something a lot closer to the truth without being all detailed. I mean, the poor cashier does not want to know that my dog is sick. They really were just being polite, but I don't need to be dishonest either. I can be honest and not be a burden to strangers. So anyway, this time, my life has been much better for the most part. I had some physical illness, and I didn't know exactly what was wrong. It took about 5 years to find out, and then I was able to have, I had some tumors, and I had to get them removed. But they had damaged my life. So I had hyperparathyroidism. So I had tumors on three of my parathyroids, which had caused me to have a nervous breakdown and end up in a mental hospital, which had H&I meetings that came in. And I was exhausted all of the time, and my arthritis was out of control, and all of that was just from these three little tumors, just little tiny things too. I feel like I am still taking care of that, even though I think I had the surgery in 2017. It really had some bad effects on my children or my husband. And this year I found that I couldn't live with my husband anymore. He had gotten to the point where he was enraged every day, multiple times. And I can't live like that. I can't live with somebody screaming and yelling and cursing all the time. In June, I moved out. I took my daughter and my two dogs and my two birds, and now we live in a little apartment. And I am trying, my husband is trying to take care of his issues, and I'm trying to take care of my issues and take care of my daughter and sometimes my adult son and the dogs and the birds and all of those things. And I still go to my home group, and I go to other meetings, and I work the step. And I didn't say this, but I don't know why. You know, I talk about having a sponsor and working the steps, but I also sponsor people and work the steps with them as well. The way I use my sponsor is more than what some people do. I feel like my sponsor, she is my friend and she is my sponsor, and sometimes she's my life coach. But I sponsor people like that, and then I sponsor people where I'm just working the steps with them, and that's fine too. But it's really important, and I think that those things that I had just let slip away from me, were critical in my life. You know, I have to go to meetings. I have to have a sponsor. I have to do service, and I have to work the steps. And no matter what, I can't use. And I mean that, those are the keys to my life, really. With that being said, I'm very happy to have spoken, and I would like to thank you for asking me. Thank you.